Hello and welcome to another episode of A Little Ray of Sunshine, inspirational stories from everyday people. Today I have with me Timothy Everett. He is a close friend of my son and was referred to me by my son. And I'm just real happy to have him with me today and to hear his story. So Tim, tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of where it begins.
So I was born in Orlando, Florida, the Sunshine State, and I had a different childhood than a lot of children have. So the first house I can remember having was one side of a one-room duplex, right? And it was my mother, father, my two brothers, and myself. So it was a real challenging living condition, especially for me being the youngest. So like at night, my oldest brother and my parents got to sleep in a bed, and then the middle child got to sleep on the couch, and then I got to sleep on the love seat because I was the smallest. Which makes sense, but looking at it as an adult, that's a horrifying situation.
Right.
So we lived in that really tiny household, and we were just really on the verge of poverty. It was really bad conditions for us. You know, the echo chamber of that house where you had fights, and there was just literally nowhere to go. You can go outside, and you still hear everything. You know, if somebody, you know, dropped something in the bathroom, you definitely heard it in the kitchen. You know, it was just tiny, tiny living expenses. So, eventually, my parents got tired of that, and then they got a divorce. So, my father continued living in that little duplex, and then my mother took my two older brothers and myself to her parents' place. And, unfortunately, conditions didn't improve. My grandfather was an abusive alcoholic, right? My mother picked up a job as a bartender. Which means that she was able to support us and we could, you know, do that sort of thing. But she wasn't present all the time. She worked a lot of nights and things like that. And I have really good memories with my grandfather waking up in the mornings. You know, he would always make the same meal every single day. He would make bacon and eggs with biscuits. And then he would crack his first beer and he would play solitaire and things were fine. And as the day just went on, you know, that's when real abuse started happening and like violence in the household started happening.
So Tim, describe a little bit about what type of abuse it was. Was it physical, mental, emotional? What type of abuse?
So a lot of that was physical abuse. As my grandfather would get drunker, he would try to like, you know, he'd curse and yell and scream and that sort of thing. But a lot of it was physical. You know, so there was a lot of hitting. You know, I watched my oldest brother take a lot of the abuse just because he was the biggest and I was the smallest and could, like, get out of there, you know. And that was really hard. And I had an aunt and uncle who was kind of seeing all that happening. And they were really worried that we were going to be taken by Child Protective Services. So they stepped in and they took me and my middle brother out of the house. And we started living with my aunt and uncle. That was a good turning point in our life. But it was also a separation. Because my oldest brother did not move in with us. He stayed with my mother and grandfather.
And he was the one that was receiving most of the abuse.
Yeah. So I don't think my aunt and uncle had the space or the ability to take all three of us. So they took just the two of us, and then we just kind of moved on from there. It made a divide in our family between the three brothers, because my oldest brother always feels like he was either like separated or just forgotten about during that time. So it's definitely a wound that we still work on today.
So what is your relationship like today with both of your brothers?
So we live in three different parts of the country, right? So I live in Idaho now. My middle brother lives in Illinois. He is an engineer, and he's doing fantastic. And my oldest brother still lives in Florida, so he's got a house of his own and wife and kids and that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, the relationship between me and my oldest brother has deteriorated. Once my mother passed, they say when a loved one passes, it typically brings a lot of people together. It unfortunately did not for us. There was a huge argument, like, right before my mother passed, and it was just never resolved. And as we now live on different, you know, sides of the country, it's difficult to piece that together, especially when they basically blocked forms of communication.
What brought you here to Idaho?
Well, I joined the Army when I was 19. I became a military police officer and served 6 years of active duty. And then once I got out of the Army, they just put you back where they found you, right? So I was back in Florida, and at that point, I had already seen a lot of the world. I've seen mountains, seasons, you know, things they don't have in Florida. And I just didn't like the large crowds. You know, I was married. I wanted to start a family. I wanted somewhere safer and better. So my aunt and uncle decided that they wanted to retire near Yellowstone. And so they were going to move out here. And I thought it was a ploy just to see grandchildren. They invited us to move out here with them until we could get, you know, a house and jobs under our feet. And we've lived out here for almost a decade now.
Oh, that's fantastic. And has most of that time been in Idaho Falls?
It has.
Mm-hmm. I kind of jumped right there, but I want to go back a little bit because typically people who go through abuse of any kind, they tend to learn something about themselves through it all. What have you learned through that?
So it was very difficult for me to trust adults. So the lesson I learned at the time as a child that I had to fix over time was to trust adults. Because I wouldn't as a child. Like, especially if an adult had been drinking any type of alcohol, I would just immediately run away and shy away and not want to talk to them at all. And I think a lot of it became personal strength for me. Because I was the smallest, you know? I was the skinniest. I mean, when I joined the Army, I think I was 140 pounds at the time. I was tiny, you know? And both my brothers are over 6 foot tall. And I am clearly not. So I think it hit me the hardest that I wanted to be able to stand up, you know, for myself, by myself, and persevere. And I think that's one of the lessons that kind of hit me from all of that, is to be able to take care of myself and stand up for myself.
Do you think that had anything to do with your decision to join the, you said Army?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that had any play in that?
I think, so when I moved in with my aunt and uncle, they took me to the Boy Scouts of America, and I joined them, and I was with them for a good chunk of my childhood. And I think a lot more of the Boy Scouts of America had something to do with it. And then when I was in high school, I got okay grades, right? I was very smart, but I wasn't extremely dedicated, probably from a lot of the stuff I was still going through as a child. So I wasn't college material at the time. So, but I consider myself very intelligent. So I was going, okay, well, if I can't get into college without taking out a lot of student loans, and I want to continue helping people and doing things that I was doing in like the Boy Scouts, so what can I do that combines my want to help people and my ability to secure and improve on my life further as an adult?
Sure.
And I figured the Army would actually do both of that. And it did for a good majority of it.
How did you actually cope during those years when you were still trying to figure life out because of the abuse? What did you do to cope?
It was a long struggle. I had a lot of anger issues as a kid. I don't know. So as far as my grandfather goes, I think I pushed a lot of it out, right? And being able to live with my aunt and uncle and only seeing like my mother on the weekends or my father every other weekend, you know, I was able to push a lot of it out through like scouting, staying active, you know, living an active lifestyle helped with a lot of it. But I had a lot of anger issues even going on into young adulthood.
And did you see a therapist, a counselor at all to give you some of those coping skills?
I did not. Which okay. is not the best answer, all right?
Well,
understandably.
Yeah, you know? But somehow you must have found a way because you seem pretty put together at this point in life.
Thank you. I appreciate that. A lot of it was using the Scout fundamentals, right? You know, a Scout is trustworthy, loyal, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, being reverent, you know, putting those all together and then really coming to grow as an adult through the Army, I think I did a lot of good for me. Not to say that when I joined the Army, I was the perfect adult at that point. It's taken a lot of time. I've seen and done a lot of things through it, but it's all gradually started piecing itself together, right? That's helped me become the person I am today.
Were you looking for a little bit of discipline? What was the big reason?
Not so much discipline, because I was always a pretty good kid. Luck have it on me that I was pretty adorable. It got me out of a lot of trouble. It was security, I think it was. It was security and companionship, right? It was belonging to an organization of a family, right, that works together, that you can trust, that you can work, get along with, you know. I could then start growing my life, you know, taking care of my needs and, you know, growing as a person and helping others as well. You know, so for a lot of me, that is a lot of why I joined. You know, I just, other than the potential of being harmed or hurt, you know, there was not a lot of downsides to it.
So what's important to you today, Tim? What's most important to you?
So what's most important to me today is my family. One of the bigger obstacles I had as a father was really coping with the fact that I would be. You know, I did not want to be my father. I did not want to be anything like him. The word father was just so, had such a bad negative connotation in my brain that just hearing the word would just upset me deeply, you know. And then now I have to be a father, right? But as these things happen, like once I became a father, that switch flipped, right? And I love my daughter more than anything in the world itself. And now I'm overjoyed to be a dad all the time. I just give her all the care and affection I can. I love my wife, Angie, more than anything in the world. We've been married just a little over 10 years now. Just had our 10-year anniversary.
So congratulations.
Thank you. And then, yeah, just making sure that I get to watch my daughter grow up and our family get taken care of.
You know, some people would say that going through the experiences similar to you had would create kind of an anxiety in them to think, am I going to be like my dad? What are you doing to prevent that?
So when I was young, I made a mental book. This was my don't do this book, right? I just listed off all the negative things that my dad would do, right? So, you know, lie, don't be abusive, you know, don't fake injuries, you know, don't do all these things that my dad did. And I realized when I got into the Army that that book is not good enough to be an adult. You need to do this book to be a good person, right?
So did you do an addendum to it? Did you create another portion of it?
I created another book. This is my do this book, right?
Awesome.
And then I started really sitting down and thinking, okay, so I know what not to do. This is what I need to do to really start building my character and who I am. You know, and I really worked hard on that to the point where I actually started writing down and made thought bubbles and really mapped it out, you know. Because when you're a kid, it's not your fault if your life is messed up.
That's right.
It's not. You just are kind of given the hand you're dealt and, you know, you go from there. But when you're an adult, right, because we all struggle with the things we have from our kid, it is your opportunity to then improve upon yourself, right? That's your moment to reach out and really strive. One of my favorite sayings is, you get the ability to wake up every single day and be the person you want to be. So who are you going to wake up as?
And that's your choice, right?
Yeah, that's 100% your choice. How you seize the day is up to you. You know, how you handle situations and conflict is 100% up to you. Of course, you know, you don't get to decide if someone's going to hit your car with their car or what the weather is. But how you choose to face those obstacles is 100% up to you. And then that is what builds your character over the long term.
I like to say that we all have activating events in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it could be anything from your parents getting divorced or, you know, just something. That's the event.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a choice about whether or not we want to look at it this way or this way. In other words, we choose our belief system over that.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the belief system we have, that affects our consequences. So if you wake up and choose to seize the day and be happy, then your consequences throughout the day are going to be different than had you chosen the opposite. How old were you when you figured that out?
I think I was just getting out of Korea, so I must have been 22, maybe 23, when that really started setting in.
And you're using that life philosophy every day, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Not to say that there are some days that I wake up on the wrong side of the bed. You know, life happens. But yes, you know, when you look at something and you go, okay, what kind of person do I want to be? Do I want to be the guy who pulls over on the side of the road to help a stranded motorist, or do I want to be the guy who drives by? You know, do I want to be the guy who yells at his kid over every inconvenience, or do I want to be the dad that consoles them and helps them? We really have those choices in our life, and I think they're really important to, you know, contemplate on and focus on to move forward.
So what's your drive to continue with that attitude?
So my drive is my biggest pressure right now is my 2-year-old, right? So she's hitting the age where she's getting, you know, a little attitude, and she's getting, you know, defiant. She likes to say no, you know. So I like to say, like, a lot of these lessons are easy when not pressured, right? Yeah. But when the pressure's on, you know, your true self really starts coming out, and that's a lot for it. Because I want my daughter to grow up in a different situation than I had. I don't want her to have to move houses every 6 months or so, you know, or be living with different relatives over and over again, or having to face that abuse. So my drive now for me is to become a good father for her and our family so she doesn't have to live through that sort of stuff.
What a great goal, right? Because I've been a father for so many years, I've been a father for 40 years, and I think about that, and being a father of young children is a little bit different than being a father of adult children. You never quit being a dad, you know what I mean? And they still look to you, and they still watch you, and so, you know, you can let up and mess up, and they'll see that, or you can continue on with the great philosophy that you have, so that your children will raise their children with the same kind of attitude. What do you think about that concept?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Kids right now, when they're at my daughter's age, they're sponges. They're just absorbing the world and everything around it. And when they mature, become, you know, know-it-all teenagers to, you know, becoming an adult, and they watch you, and they watch you in a more subjective way. So it becomes less of like, oh, well, that affected me, and, you know, whatever the case may be, to why did he do that exactly? And if the answers aren't good in their head, that puts a negative reflection on your relationship, right? Because now they're figuring it out. Okay, my dad's not Superman. He is a person who has a life out there, and they are just trying the best they can to survive in the world, right?
You know what that does? It gives them more of an appreciation for, you know, when they were growing up with their dad, now they're at that stage. So it gives them, I guess, more of appreciation for being a dad, being a parent, either way, right? Mm-hmm. Let's go back and talk about your family. How many children do you have?
So we're done with one. Mm-hmm. It took us about 8 years to have our child, and she's what we like to call our miracle child.
Oh, how so?
So we were married for 8 years, could not have kids. We tried everything under the sun. We tried planning, scheduling, IUIs. We tried foster and adoption. Like, everything just blew up in our face. Boom, 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 boom. You know, we went to see doctors, and they told us basically that we couldn't have kids. And it was basically on me to why we couldn't have kids. So I started working out at a new job in the desert. It's a radiological facility. So they say that radiation doesn't cause any kind of, you know, birth defects or anything like that, which makes perfect sense. But oh boy, is our insurance good for it, though. So there's IVF.
In vitro
fertilization.
Fertilization.
It's about $14,000 a try. Good news is, if you have to try twice, the second try is like only $5,000. So what a deal, right? Our insurance, however, all you have to do is meet the deductible. So that's $2,000. My wife is like, we're trying this. I mean, we got to do it, right? So it's a complicated thing. you have to inject yourself as the female with like a lot of hormones to get your body to have this reaction so they can retrieve your eggs, and they artificially inseminate them, and then they place them back in you, and then you cross your fingers. So we are on track. You know, we got the prescription for all the shots. We were ready to go. All we had to do was wait for my wife's cycle to start, and then she could start injecting herself with all these hormones, right? And we're waiting. And we're waiting. And it never happens, because she was pregnant.
Because she was pregnant before?
Correct.
Interesting.
So after 8 years of trying, it was just the threat of IVF that really got things going.
Oh, my word.
We accredit a lot of it to the opportunity to working out there. I left a really stressful, bad job beforehand. And then, of course, before that, I was in the Army. So, you know, I was dealing with all these high-stress situations. So we think a lot of it has to do with, okay, I've got a good job. I feel more secure. My body was able to relax a little bit more, maybe.
Fantastic. Well, I can see now why you call your daughter your miracle daughter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fantastic.
Well, as we wrap this up a little bit, I always like to have my guests share some advice to people who have gone through similar situations and might not have that same positive attitude as you do. What would you say to them?
I would tell them to find something to help you build moral convictions and guidelines to help improve your life. For me, it started with the Boy Scouts of America that really laid the groundwork on being a good person and a good citizen. And if you're already an adult and you want to, you know, help out with the organization or volunteer, I think that would be a great thing. The Army did a lot for me as well. It gave me the ability to do that. Religion, if you're religious at home or you wanted to start seeking into religion, that's a huge one to give somebody a moral compass, rules to live by, and stuff like that. Once you start really understanding that we might not be the perfect write-off, just what we think by ourselves, and you really start growing as a person to be like, okay, I can improve these ways, it really becomes obvious to those around you the kind of person you're, you know, turn into.
And you made a conscious choice early on that you weren't going to let the abuse that happened, the things that you witnessed, affect you throughout your life. I had a lady say to me one time that had gone through some pretty serious abuse herself. And for the longest time, she said, I allowed the abuser to live rent-free in my head. And one day I decided to evict him and to kick him out. Well, she made that decision. Her life changed.
It's been a struggle. When I was a kid, I would order a cheeseburger from like McDonald's. You know what would be on it?
Cheese.
That's it. It would be meat, cheese, bun. That's all. Because when I was little, what my dad used to do is he used to like replace pickles with jalapenos or ketchup with hot sauce, right? And I would eat it, right? Because he would say, oh no, don't worry about it, it's pickles. I would eat it, and then my mouth would be on fire, and I would start crying, and he thought that was hilarious. Well, the life lesson for me I learned at that point was, hey, don't trust adults, get the bare minimum of foods, right? And then only eat those things. And it took me years, just to start trying. Now I love food, right? I'm a fat kid at heart, maybe on the outside too. And, when I went to Korea, I ate all the foods in Korea that I could find. And I ate just everything I could get my hands on once I really start breaking it. But it took a long time. To this day, I really don't fancy spicy foods. And I credit it maybe subliminally to those moments that happened to me as a childhood. And I just don't particularly care for them. But I eat a lot. I trust people to make me foods too.
All right. Well, that's good. That's progress right there. I say this a lot on my podcast, but I'll say it again to you. And it's this. We are either a product of our past or a victim, and the choice is up to us. How did you actually feel like you are a product and everything wasn't bad because you chose to rise above? How'd you do that?
I think it was an epiphany moment where you realize that all these things happen, but they happened in the past, you know? You get to drive forward from tomorrow and realizing the struggles and issues I had. Okay, so I was a soldier, right? So this makes sense. And I was in Afghanistan and all that sort of stuff. So when I came back, like a lot of soldiers that have, they develop PTSD. right? Things like fireworks, you know, can set it off. Large crowds can set it off, that sort of thing. And it was a lot of realizing that thing was going on to then start seeking help for it. You know, I sought out literature. It's called On Combat. It's fantastic. I went to counseling for it. You know, I moved on from things from there, but it was about really just knowing that, hey, this is an issue. You know, it's abnormal for me to not like fireworks because I grew up with them, or not like spicy foods because you're an adult and you're like cowering away from cheeseburgers, you know, and start getting the help for that to move forward.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you've done. Even though you didn't get therapy, you figured it out. Ways to make that happen for you. Well, Tim, you're quite an inspiration. I believe that because you've demonstrated the power of positive choices and how it's affecting you for the better and helping your family, I think that's a great message that we do have choices over how we feel. We may not have control over what happens many times, but we have control over how we feel about it. And that's powerful. Well, thank you for being here and taking time out of your day to be part of this podcast. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
And to my listeners, remember to speak up, speak out, and speak often. Bye-bye.